Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck, and I'm your host on the weekend show and also throughout the week at our website, kereport.com, and on our podcast, Corlin Economics Report. It was another very, very busy week. A lot of daily editorials and a lot more company introductions and interviews. Please, everybody, keep on sending me your emails. Let me know what you think of the companies I'm bringing on in the resource sector and even outside of the resource sector. I've really been focusing over the last few months now. Let's get into this weekend show as I am kicking the show off with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies, writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors. This is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world, also writes the In the Know Trader for the retail side, and has a piece called 7-Eleven, where Rick picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs. Rick, let's start with U.S. equity markets. The end of the week, the market's performing quite well, and that's on the back of a pretty disappointing jobs number. Clearly, investors are thinking that the Fed is going to keep that money tap open. But Rick, what are you seeing in the equity markets here? They've mostly moved sideways for the last 3 weeks, having a bit of a breakout at the end of the week. How do you view the health of U.S. equities?
I think in general, Corey, things are good, especially if you look at the S&P and the Dow. NASDAQ certainly having a good day today, but it is terribly underperformed from mid-April on. If you take a look at technology versus the S&P, consumer discretionary versus the S&P, both have really badly underperformed. And it's very possible that that continues. And it makes me think that, you know, there's still going to be more sector rotation into cyclicals and potentially out of the growth side. So I would still say value will trump growth. And in general, the market looks okay. And, you know, the S&P is out to new all-time highs today. And, you know, it, after going sideways during earnings season, we're kind of getting a bump up now. And, you know, we've seen most of companies report already, so we're on the tail end of earnings. The fact that we can get a move like this, especially to end the week, we had told our institutional clients and retail clients that as long as the S&P held 4124, there was no worry. And the weekly low was 4128 when we sold off on Monday or Tuesday this week. I don't remember which day it was, but you know, we held exactly where we needed to, and the S&P has turned around and made new all-time highs. So all is good, and I think there's more to come on the upside for the equity markets.
And it's really just this continued rotation, right? As you said, there are a couple of sectors that are standing out. We'll cover a lot of that kind of later on in the show. But when it comes to just the available capital, I think we can both say that investors, they're not fearful. They're still pretty optimistic about the markets and potentially even this economic restart. Is that fair?
I think that's a fair statement. They are optimistic, and there hasn't really been much to be pessimistic about. And when there are, you know, the occasional news events that one could worry about the market, you get a 1 or 2 day sell-off, and then buyers come right back in, which shows you how much demand there is for stocks. And it continues to happen. And the fact that we held that key 4124 level in the S&P and have broken out above 4200 to new highs is, to me, very important and shows that, you know, there's still demand and all is okay.
Now, when you talk about potential news events that could scare investors away, is there anything on your radar that could trigger that a bit more defensive trade? Because, again, at the tail end of the week, we got a bad jobs number, and that is actually helping the market.
Yeah, you never know, because the other thing that's really happening big in the last 2 days is that the dollar has come off strongly. And, you know, we went from the dollar index went from, I don't know, 92, 40-ish or 30-ish down to about 90, 40 today. That's a big move in just 2 days. And that down move in the dollar, you know, you look at 2020, the dollar went straight down and equities went straight up. So when you get a big move in the dollar down, it helps the equity market. And so I don't know if today's move in equities is really the jobs report related or more dollar related. But either way, the market's up and they like what they see.
What is your assessment of the dollar? Because 2021, the dollar was off to a pretty decent start for the first 3 months, really climbing from below 90 on the dollar index the whole way up to about 93.5. But then April, it was almost a straight down move for the dollar the whole way back to about that 90 and change level. Do you think that was really just the start of another leg down for the dollar?
So we played that dollar move perfectly. We were long the dollar index right on the lows, 89.23. I think the low print was 89.21. So we bought the low and we held it to 92.91. So we took out, I don't know, 80% of the dollar, the bullish move that happened to start the year. I have been bullish the dollar up until today. And I think today's move is enough. It's going to take us out of in the no trader. Last week we bought the dollar. We're only going to lose a fraction of a percent because we really tightened up the stop when I saw things stall where it did. And I think today could be the first time that I'm going to lose my dollar bullishness in the near term. And I knew everybody was just way too bearish the dollar to start the year. But the fact that we've done what we did in the last 2 days, I think, is very significant. And unless the dollar immediately rebounds, then I think we could end up testing those lows that we saw right at the start of the year. So, yeah, things started very well for the dollar, opposite to how the market thought it would. But now it may end up being correct. So you might have squeezed out, you know, some of the enough of the shorts to allow the market to go down.
What do you think's driving the dollar moves here? Because in all fairness, April, we were peppered with some pretty good economic data out of the U.S. and the dollar went down. We've had the Fed just consistently being as boring as possible and keeping their current money printing program really at just current levels. So what are some of the key drivers behind future dollar moves in your eyes?
I think that the market is looking at the Washington political story and you know, the Democratic agenda and what Biden is doing. And, you know, his big stimulus programs, which in general I agree with and the country needs, is printing a heck of a lot of money. You know, these are multi-trillion dollar programs that he's trying to get through Congress. And that's not helpful for the dollar. That devalues the dollar. And I think that's why the marketplace was so bearish to start the year, is they knew he had won the presidential election. They knew that his stimulus programs were going to cost a lot and that the government was going to need to essentially print a heck of a lot of money for all these programs to be put into place if they pass. And that's the biggest drag on the dollar to me, and why, you know, people were so bearish.
Interesting. How is that lower dollar playing into inflation expectations? Because that's what everybody seems to have their eye on, including the central banks, is inflation. We have seen inflation expectations tick up, but some people are still claiming that that's just going to be transitory inflation. This is an argument that I think will go on forever, but where do you stand on the inflation debate?
Yeah, so since early fall of 2020, the model that we look at to gear inflation, upcoming inflation, has been showing that investors are positioned for an upcoming inflationary environment. And I think that model that we use has been dead on, because it's now 4 months of last year plus, it has consistently showed inflationary expectations. And even though our Fed chairman is saying don't worry about inflation, the market investors certainly are worried about inflation. And I think, like you say, this is a debate that's going to last for quite some time. Investors are betting it's going to happen. The Fed is saying it's not. And until you see a change in the investor positioning in the markets, and that includes a whole bunch of markets we look at and the relative performance of different markets to each other, then I think you're going to see this investors position this way and saying that we're going to see inflation. And it'll be interesting to see how long Fed Chairman Powell keep saying, well, you know, don't worry about it. So I think the debate will go on not only between investors themselves, but between investors and the Fed. And I agree with you. This is not going away anytime soon. And if you know, the weaker dollar, you're seeing it help the metals. Gold is over 1,800. We perfectly, you know, got the bottom in the gold market. We told that long-term investors should get long between 1,710 and 1,640. Remember, the low was somewhere 1,685. And so we're positioned long. We've got the right move here. And what I've been writing recently is that bears are really in trouble in gold. They've lost control of the gold market. Bulls are not totally in control yet. I think you need a breakout over 1920 that stays above 1920 for bulls to fully be in charge of the gold market. But right now, bears are really hurting. And I'm glad about that because we're long gold.
It's quite the battle between the bulls and the bears when it came to gold, hey? Especially in the last few weeks, gold was trading in about a $50 range, and it couldn't break out over 15 or over 1,800, but then it also had support around 1,750, and we finally did get that breakout this week. But again, there's a lot of other resistance levels that gold needs to take out. You mentioned that you really want to see gold up in the 1,900s. How plausible is that in the near term? What do you think, Rick?
Corey, I think it's plausible if the dollar breaks to its lows. If you test 89 and a quarter, anything down near there, and or make new lows, I think gold's got really room to run, and that you know, north of 1900, where it failed. The last failure in gold, if I remember correctly, got up to 1927, and that's, you know, we had that day warned that if it didn't close up there, it was a false breakout, and you know, that was the top day. I forget what month it was, but if you get gold back above, you know, roughly 1920, that's great news for gold, and it's very possible if we see the low being retested in the dollar.
Rick, when it comes to the generalist community that you talk to and deal with, how are they viewing gold right now? Because if you listen to the gold bugs, they're saying that gold is has never been this hated before, this ignored when it was moving down for those 7 months. I take the other side of that, saying that the generalist community is still paying attention to gold. They just saw other opportunities out there. They didn't necessarily hate it. They were just waiting for a bit of a trend change. What have you been hearing in terms of generalist investors' attitude towards gold?
Most of them are generally bullish gold, but interestingly, I didn't think I'd see the day you're getting some of them talking about the cryptos. And, you know, you certainly, as good as gold has been the last month, you certainly made a heck of a lot more money being long, you know, some of the cryptos. And I don't think gold is being replaced by the crypto market, but the fact that hedge funds are now looking in that direction towards whether it's Bitcoin or Ethereum, you know, there are now Ethereum futures and traded on a Chicago Merc. And, you know, once you had the Bitcoin futures traded starting in, I think it was December of 2018, happened to be the top of Bitcoin as soon as they started trading futures. But the fact that there are now Ethereum futures on the Chicago Merc is giving credence to, you know, the second most important crypto. And the fact that there is a futures market for it says that you can't have a futures market exist without institutional partaking. And the fact that, you know, you're seeing a few thousand contracts traded in Ethereum each day. And it's an Ethereum contract. When the Chicago Merc started the futures contract, Ethereum was so cheaply priced that one contract was 50 Ethereum. Now 50 Ethereum is over 150 grand because Ethereum was going at 3,500. So, you know, it's well over 150,000. I think when they started trading, 50 contracts was less than $50,000. So once again, you're knocking out some of the people who could play because they're getting so higher priced, which is why Bitcoin futures came up recently with just, I don't know, a week or two ago with the micro futures. you can now trade Bitcoin futures instead of five of them, which nobody except institutions could afford to trade when they're trading at 50,000 and the contract's 250,000 and the margin was like 85,000 for one contract. Obviously, individual investors are not putting up $85,000 to trade Bitcoin. So they lost the futures market very quickly lost the individuals playing, the speculators. So now what they did is create a Bitcoin micro future, which is simply one contract, one Bitcoin. So now it's only a $50,000 contract, and it's very easy for individual investors to start playing again. So, and the thing is that the Bitcoin is, the new micro future is 1/10 of one Bitcoin future. So, you know, the value of this new contract is really only a $5,000 contract. So now you can, anybody can play this, can play Bitcoin in a very, you know, liquid way as an alternative to the cash market at $50,000. You can trade a Bitcoin at 1/10 its price through the futures market. So all this is really saying that, sure, gold, you know, has been around for thousands of years and has always had some type of intrinsic value, and it still does, but you are seeing this, very surprisingly, the crypto market also getting institutional interest. And I think it's not going to necessarily hurt the price of gold because there's still plenty of funds who invest in gold, but it is now a looked at alternative investment. And even though somebody today, I don't know, in the government said that, you know, beware trading cryptos, you could lose 100% of your money, and that's true, people are willing to, you know, get involved.
That's such a big development, having the institutions also trading it. And look, in all fairness, cryptos have been way more exciting than gold. It makes sense why some traders are riding that wave higher, because look at the moves Ethereum made just this week. Rick, where do you stand, though? Do you think, A, cryptos are going to be around and this relevant for a prolonged period of time? And do you think a crash is due because of the high volatility that seems to be inherent in cryptos and that almost euphoric rise that we've seen?
It's a good question, Corey. You know, would I love to see a crash? Yeah, because I'm not long any of it myself yet. So I wouldn't mind seeing Ethereum come off $1,000 or $1,500 or some number that just makes it more reasonable to take a shot at. But it seems like they're going to be around. And I can't tell you, you know, look, people are going to lose money on these things, but a lot of people have made money too. And you just have to know that if you're going to play it, you need to be aware that any single day can move 20 or 30% against you. 20 or 30% with you, although that's less likely, and that it's possible that this stuff at some point in time ends up being worthless and then you lose everything. That's the risk you have to take. You don't have that risk in the equity market. You know that even if the equity market crashes, you know, there's a value to the U.S. stock market, that the S&P is always going to have value, that companies will always have value. You have no idea in the crypto space if any of this stuff is going to have value. Will somebody ever need to actually own Bitcoin for any reason that's anything other than speculative? Even, let's say, Elon Musk, who said that he bought millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin for his Tesla now owns Bitcoin. And other hedge funds have come forward to say that they own, and other individual companies. The question is, will Bitcoin or any other crypto ever become so popular that it's actually, you know, traded and needed other than just people speculatively saying, oh, I own it and I played with it? If you're not going to need Bitcoin to go into the supermarket to buy something, I'm not sure it's ever going to really need to have value. It may have value. People will bid it to some speculative level. But will it need to be there? That's the question. And to me, that's the unknown part. Will I ever need to own a Bitcoin? I need to own U.S. dollars. because I can't go in and spend money for my family. I can't pay a mortgage in Bitcoin, at least not yet. And even if some company says, hey, we're going to let you pay your mortgage in Bitcoin, as long as I can still pay in dollars, I don't need Bitcoin. So unless Bitcoin is going to replace the world's most important currency, I don't see why anybody would ever need to own it. You might want to own it, but if you don't need to own it, there's only so much value it can have at some point, because then the only people who are buying it are really speculators. And something at some point will make a crash. You have crashes in every market. There isn't a market that exists that doesn't have crashes. And Bitcoin has had multiple crashes over the years. So it's lost, 80% of its value multiple times. So whether it's Ethereum, Bitcoin, or something else that comes along, if I don't have a need to have it, and the bulk of the population, whether it's in the U.S. or anywhere else in the world, doesn't have a need, but it's only a want for speculative purposes, and there's only so much value Bitcoin or anything else can have. And at some point, somebody's going to realize that, hey, it's way too much. They're going to sell, and selling will begin selling. And at some point, people are going to lose real money again. When that happens, I don't know.
Fair enough, Rick. No one knows. But it's been a very interesting ride on that crypto market. And for as many haters as there are out there, clearly there's more people that love it or at least see an opportunity to put some money there. Whether right or wrong, they've been right recently. So we'll see how much longer that market can continue to move. Rick, we'll wrap it up here. It's great having you back on the show, buddy. Thank you very much for taking some time on this weekend show. I look forward to reconnecting with you in about a month's time. Rick, I know everybody appreciates your thoughts. So again, thank you for this weekend show.
Corey, thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure being on your show.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Rick Bensignor. We're going to continue to focus more on the broad markets and the individual sectors that are doing well, as I am chatting with Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago. Now, Dana, the U.S. markets, for the most part, have been kind of choppy. Sideways, really flatlined from the consistent rise that we were seeing almost month over month. This has been about a 3-week trend now. It's the markets are a bit more selective when it comes to which sectors are running. It was a couple months ago that you and I were talking about overall breadth, and you're outlining the fact that it just seemed like everything was running. There are some extreme breadth indicators. Now it's just coming down to certain sectors that continue to perform, really about playing or continuing to play some of these uptrends. Dana, what are some of the sectors that you are focused on right now?
Yeah, sure, Corey. Yeah, as you mentioned, we talked about that post-election period where basically everything went straight up for like 3 months and you could not lose. You throw a dart at the board, you couldn't lose. The hard part then was actually being in it at the beginning because everyone got scared out right before the election. But if you were in it, that was about as good a market, as easy a market as you're ever going to get. Over the last, you say 3 weeks, even 3 months, it's been more of a two-way market that we've called where, as an active risk manager, this is where you earn your keep. It's not, like you said, everything going straight up. So you have to be a little bit more selective in both your timing when you're buying, when you're getting in, but also now in terms of investment selection, what you're going to buy. So, but there's no, the growth gets the headlines because it's been pulling back of late, technology and the NASDAQ and even the Russell 2000, but there's no shortage of sectors and market segments that are still attractive is still seemingly hitting new highs every single day. Areas like, you know, industrials and materials, financials, a lot of the commodity markets that we talked about that would go hand in hand with the materials, and even other markets like we talked about, like the crypto markets. There's really, you know, no shortage of opportunities out there. You just have to be, like I mentioned, a little bit more selective in what you're getting into now. It's not, you know, throw a dart kind of a market. You have to be a little bit more active in your selection as well as your timing and when you're getting in. And it's still overall breadth-wise, no major concerns. There are areas that have broken down or pulling back of late, but just last week, like I think we talked about recently, you know, advanced decline line was at all-time high. All the broad averages were at all-time high, so we don't see major overall breadth concerns yet at this point.
Okay, Dana, let's look at the value sector then, because as much as growth had everyone's attention a number of months ago, value has started to take over. Is this a rotation into value that you see continuing?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say for sure, but right now it is continuing. So we kind of play what's happening now, and value continues to, it's one of those areas that continues to move up day after day, all time high day after day. So right now, that's certainly the place to be. You don't have to rotate out of growth like wholesale. There's still opportunities there. In fact, right now you're seeing mid cap and large cap growth pulling back and testing some support levels. So we're buying the dip there as well. But if those support levels give way, that's what I'm talking about, being a little bit more active in managing risk. If those support levels give way, then we'll likely be out of there. But you can get in. You just have to be a little bit more selective in buying those dips and growth. But value is one of those areas that it might be, you know, it hasn't been in favor for so long. It's been out of favor for so long that it can certainly continue for a long time, much longer than people think, as trends tend to do. So it might be early. And if it is, it's still probably not too late to get into it. Certainly, we'd like to buy it on a dips, but there certainly has not been many dips of late in value, which is, you know, like I was talking about, half the market, people ask me about the market. It depends what market you're looking at. Half the market is like hitting new highs every day. The other half, which gets more headlines, like the NASDAQ and the tech, is has been pulling back of late, but not necessarily stick a fork in that area of the market, although it has been, it is more on more thin ice. But value is where it's at more so now, and could still be early in the relative value versus growth ratio, I guess you would call it.
Okay. What about commodities too? Because you look across the board on commodities, and in the last year, pretty much every commodity has had its turn to scream higher. Food continues to run. Right now, base metals are continuing to move higher. Precious metals ran, about 7 or 8 months ago. That was the end of its run when it corrected, but we're starting to see a bit more life come back into the gold and silver space. Where are you looking commodity-wise?
Yeah, commodity-wise, we've been pretty active as well, because we want to catch up trends wherever they are, stocks or otherwise. So commodities have been, as you said, a great play as well, as kind of the reflation trade. So precious metals have been basically consolidating their bull market move into last summer. I think this is still a healthy consolidation. I think we still see a breakout eventually and a new up leg there. But of late, we've seen like the base metals you talked about, we've been in copper for a while. Corn, we've been in for a while. Grains have been going bananas. So pretty much across the board, even oil has maintained its uptrend, holding key support in the near term recently and maintained the uptrend. So across the board, almost in commodity land, you've got opportunities. So it's not just obviously stocks, but that has obviously aided many of the equities related to those resource areas, and also other, you know, international markets that have continue to move higher or hold up very well based on the heavy resource component to those many of those international markets.
Interesting, Dana. So what do you think are some of the levels, or what are some levels that you're watching closely on any of the commodities, say precious metals or even any of the base metals like copper?
Copper, well, we trade ETFs. So one of the ETFs we're in, CPR, just tested all-time highs today, as a matter of fact. So we did take some profits there. Corn, we trade the corn ETF, CORN, hit that first retracement, Fib retracement from its all-time high in 2012 or earlier this week. So we did take some profits there. So we're not chasing, we're not buying at all costs, but these things are still in firm uptrends, and we would continue to buy the dips in pretty much any of these commodities as long as, you know, we're seeing higher highs and higher lows. So they are getting a little bit extended, which is why we're taking some profits, but still riding with the rest of the position. And we'll be looking down the road to buy some dips as well.
Let's also talk cryptocurrencies, because as much as Bitcoin still has a lot of people's attention, Ethereum has gone through really a euphoric rise here, almost, well, I guess, trying to play a little bit of catch up to Bitcoin. But I know you've been sucked into that crypto space. So, Dana, where do you stand now?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't take a lot to get us sucked in. We're not buying the hype. All it takes is a price chart with enough history to plug into our models, and Ethereum and Bitcoin both had that. So we had that breakout in Bitcoin, like you mentioned, late in 2020. Hopped on board there and ran with that. And then Ethereum, like we talked about, is maybe a couple months behind. Maybe a month behind Bitcoin. We saw the breakout in January. We've been on a board there. That's hit basically parabolic status over the last week or two. So we did take some profits today, as you since you asked. Around 3,600 is one of the key Fib extension levels that we're looking at. So certainly would not be chasing Ethereum up here or any of the other ones, but still in an uptrend, still happy to buy the dips as long as we're, again, we're seeing the higher highs and higher lows. So Ethereum might be the new Bitcoin. It's playing catch up. But if Bitcoin can rally, you ask about levels, if it can decisively move back above that, call it 58,000 level, that puts new highs back on the table. And we'd be looking at about the 74,000 level next in Bitcoin.
Wow. Okay. There are some levels for everyone to stick to. Dana, very interesting. Always chatting with you. You do a great job of filtering out a lot of the noise, news headlines, and really just looking at the charts and playing these uptrends. So something to consider for all those active investors that follow along with our show. Dana, great chatting with you this weekend. I hope you have a great weekend, and we'll chat again in another couple weeks.
Sounds great. Thanks, Corey.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are getting a company update this time from GR Silver Mining, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol GRSL and on the OTCQB under the symbol GRSLF. I'm chatting with the president and CEO, Marcio Fonseca. Now, Marcio, I wanted to feature the company on the weekend show because there are a couple news releases just this week that we can summarize that really go to show the progress that the company is making at both projects, the San Marcial project and the Plomosas Silver project, both in Mexico, pretty much adjacent to each other. Let's start off with the news release at the beginning of the week, May 3rd. The company reported some more drill results from the San Juan area on the Plomosas Silver project. We saw a combination here of high grade, more narrow intercepts, and then wider intercepts with a bit lower grade silver mineralization. So some of the headline numbers here, 2 meters of 954 grams per ton silver. Total silver equivalent here was over 1,100 grams per ton. We also had 1.1 meter of 863 grams per ton silver equivalent, and then the wider intercept, 22.3 meters of 126 grams per ton silver equivalent. Marcio, give us a little bit more insights into what these drill results continue to tell you about the San Juan area, please.
For sure. Thank you for having me again. The San Juan area, just to remind the audience, has six veins, and the news release that we published on May 3rd is related to the San Juan vein and La Colorada y Acora veins, three veins, which are going to be part of the resource estimates that we are doing as we speak. So the importance of the drill results is because at the San Juan vein, we stepped out 100 meters along the strike, and that's where we hit an additional mineralization, 2 meters at 954 grams per ton silver, as you mentioned. But working with the drill data that we have received historically and more drill holes at the Iacora area in La Colorada, we got these results of wide intersections very close to the surface, which is a surprise to us because showed that not only you can have the high-grade component in that area, but also you can have shallow mineralization, not super high-grade, but very attractive for potential open-pit amenable kind of deposit, which is good for us, adding more and more ounces to the resource that we are working as we speak.
Now, how much drilling is still ongoing in this area or on Plomosas broadly?
For sure, at Plomosas mine area, which is the second area that we are doing another resource estimate, we have finalized all the drilling, surface and underground drilling. We are now working with the data with the qualified person. At the San Juan, we still have three drill rigs there, which we want to keep in the company, because we are drilling in one area that's the La Colorada, is part of the San Juan, used to be a gold mine, and we are getting some very interesting intersections with the core that we are receiving down deep, and that's important for us. But we expect to finalize all the drilling, the surface drilling in the San Juan area, probably in the next 10, 15 days maximum.
And then are you guys moving towards a resource here for Plomosas broadly?
Yeah, we are working already on the Plomosas resource estimation. And of course, when we stop the drilling at San Juan, all the data is going to be collected and integrated for the second resource estimation. And the idea is that probably by the end of the second quarter of 2021, we'll have a one report, that's 143-101, but two areas, two resource estimators in that area.
Okay, so something to look forward to in terms of the fundamental value here of a resource at Plomosas. Let's also talk about the San Marcial Silver Project, because the news out on May 6th outlined the completion of the full acquisition of this project. So the final cash and share payments were made. I want to go back to the beginning here of the initial option agreement, back signed in 2018. That's what really kicked off GR Silver Mining. At that time, it was named Goldplay Exploration. The advancements that your team has made at this project over the last about 3 years have gone to really what you were telling us when I first brought you on the show a number of years ago. Take us through the progress that the company has seen at the San Marcial project since the initial option agreement back in 2018, please.
For sure. The closing or the acquisition of 100% of San Marcial is a major milestone for us, not only because we believe the project has a lot of potential, but also we are just delivering to the public what we told everybody we were going to do, to be a leading company controlling the key assets in that Rosario mining district. So going back to 2018, we got a project with some drill holes, we put some more holes, and in 12 months, we were able to increase the indicated resource 57% and the inferred category 126, much more than what we had before. And we published the resource, which showed that can be a very attractive, high-grade, low strip ratio, potentially open pit amenable kind of silver deposits. Not many silver mines in Mexico can be open pit to start with. But we realized that outside of the 500 meters long trend that we had at San Marcial, we have a lot of evidence that the trend can be up to 6 kilometers. And at that time, we realized that some of the anomalies or targets that we encountered in the field were very close to the boundary of the concession. That's what drove us to go for the acquisition and control everything in the area. And as part of the work in the last 3 years, not only a lot of geology, a lot of geologists working, and congratulations to the team, they have done a great job there. We decided that one of the key points was to really unlock new discoveries, to bring news would be to really do more geology, but also bring a modern geophysical survey, is what we are doing as we speak. First time ever, ground geophysical survey, IP and MAG, close to 80 kilometers of lines. That's going to cover the whole San Marcial and bring more opportunities for drilling.
Now, Marcio, just to backtrack a little bit as well, before the company, well, even signed this option agreement, I know the project had been in the hands of other, some well-known companies, some not as well-known exploration companies, but the work that GR Silver has done here has really advanced the project. What was that big change in terms of how you guys looked at this project using some of these new techniques that really opened it up?
The last 3 years, not only we did a lot of work in the field, we collect a lot of samples, more than 13,000 rock samples and analyzed by XRF and defined all these anomalies. But the way we look now at this project, the San Marcial, is pretty much integrating our San Marcial with the Plomosas. We have a trend that starts in the north at Plomosas and run all the way to San Marcial, the resource area. Everything is all connected. It's just one single mineralized trend. And we are working on this with now probably close to 20 or a little bit more than 20 geologists in Mexico working that area as priority.
So now this big picture look at the two projects combined and the trends that look like they're running through both projects. I understand that large geophysical survey that you guys are undertaking is really, well, to me, that means that you're looking for even new targets and even more discoveries to be made. How is that all playing into the growth avenues here for the company?
Yeah, in relation to the growth of the company, is going to be to support the ability to very quick have some drill rigs moving close to these targets between now and the end of the year and continue to drill and discover more mineralized zones outside of the resource area. But we also are going to be put some drill holes on the ground and in the vicinity of the resource area to continue to expand the resource at San Marcial, aiming maybe to have an updated resource at San Marcial by the end of the year. So the company is doing probably 2 or 3 resource estimations in 1 year. It's a big milestone.
Marcio, just remind everybody where the company stands in terms of the current resources, both at San Marcial and at Plomosas, please.
Yes, San Marcial, which is the current 43-101, has 39 million ounces silver indicated inferred, and we are going to expand that on a strike length of 500 meters. It's a breccia wide, 10, 20 meters. San Juan and Plomosas, although Plomosas was an old mine, lead and zinc, nobody has ever done a 43-101. We are going to be the first company to do a 43-101. Both areas, San Juan and Plomosas, have similar geology and similar or much longer strike lengths than the resource area at San Marcial. So you can have an idea about the magnitude, what we are aiming to increase as a resource. And then we have an update of the resource at San Marcial extending beyond the 500 meters before the end of the year.
Okay, so a lot of work ongoing and a lot of drilling, it sounds like, still ongoing and upcoming. Now, the company did just close an oversubscribed bought deal private placement back at the tail end of April. Total cash that came in was a little bit more than $11.5 million. Just summarize all the news and expected work for all the listeners, for the company, in terms of what we can look forward to come out of GR Silver.
Yeah, we'll be very active on the news flows because not only we still have a large number of drill holes at the lab expecting assays for the Plomosas drilling and so on in the next couple of weeks and feeding the market until the publishing the resource. And with the commitment to have at least 3 drill rigs full-time in the properties. The properties can be San Marcial or Plomosas and other areas like maybe Trinidad in the near future. That's going to sustain the news flow. And as we continue to work, you might start doing some engineering work, thinking about how we can, in the second half, kick off a preliminary economic assessment of Plomosas San Marcial, likely to be integrated project.
Okay, that's a key right there too, is that the look I think that everyone needs to take of this company is not necessarily at these two different projects, it's as a whole here because of the trends and because of the continuity that you have been seeing between the two projects. Marcio, we're going to wrap it up here. If anybody has any follow-up questions, please email me, fleck@kereport.com. I really appreciate you wrapping up this weekend show for us, Marcio. And again, everybody listening, I really appreciate you guys tuning in throughout the weekend and also throughout the week for all those daily editorials and all those company interviews I posted just this week. Please keep all the emails coming, fleck@kereport.com. And I hope everybody has a great weekend. Marcio, thanks again for your time.
Thank you.